everybody. I'm Pinakin Munshi. I have about 30 years of experience in the industry with three multinational companies, about 16 years of experience in supply chain, and I'm going to lead you through the process of legal aspects in supply chain management. We will start with the first chapter, which is the supply chain management, the legal aspects, some fundamentals, basics about the legal aspects in supply chain. What are we going to cover in today's session? We will understand the definition of supply chain management, a brief description. We will get knowledge about the evaluation of supply chain management, understand the needs and importance of various legal aspects in supply chain management. So what is the definition of supply chain management? Supply chain management is a generic term which is used to, it includes all activities right from order generation to order fulfillment, execution that is, and right up to distribution and logistics. So it covers all activities right from forecasting or demand planning, procurement, receipt of goods, that is warehousing, production facilities or production activities, again warehousing of the finished goods, and distribution or logistics. The product we are talking of can be either a physical product or it can be a service. So it need not be that it has to be always a physical product. The supply chain can also deliver a service. So how did supply chain evolve? Somewhere around 1904, Rolls-Royce started defining supply chain or looking at it in a very structured way. Earlier, the supply chain activities that we talked about were not very formalized. They were not given the kind of importance or significance that we give today. Between 1960 and 1975 came the era of the push management or the push inventories, where companies started forecasting the requirement and they started producing material to a forecast. So they would, irrespective of how the market demand was fluctuating, go by a particular forecast. Next came the pull system of inventory control between 1975 and 80, where the focus shifted from producing against a forecast, because invariably people found that forecasts were not very accurate, which means you produced material which did not sell, and there were customer requirements or demands which were unmet. That means there were stockouts. So in the pull system, you started looking at what the customer was buying, and then accordingly you start making those products. So your entire supply chain is focused on what the customer is ordering or what the customer is buying, what inventories you have of that product within your system, and accordingly you then produce the material and supply the material which is in demand. 1980, the supply chain became a separate function by itself. Earlier, it used to be split into different functions. So like, the logistics used to be called as transportation, or the purchase was just a standalone department, etc. So supply chain was formalized in 1980 when major corporations started looking at it as a unique function, as a standalone function, which was managing the entire chain, value chain of supply chain. Then 1985, Walmart started this cross-docking concept. Cross-docking basically is a hub and spoke concept where you have a distribution of materials across a wide region. Now the material is produced at various places and it has to converge at a hub where, basically in a cross-docking situation, you have a warehouse and you have trucks coming with the finished goods from the manufacturing side, and you also have trucks which are going back to the distribution points or the sale points, and you basically reassign or reroute the material at the cross-docking stations, and you distribute the material. So you optimize the transportation. So it is not that every manufacturing site will have vehicles or trucks or modes of transport moving to every point of sale. Then you have the internet revolution in 1996. We had the dot-com, bubble. And that is where the e-commerce also started. And around 2000, the e-commerce logistics has evolved, where basically the focus is on, distributing the material in the shortest possible time. And we know today that some of the e-commerce portals promise delivery on the same day. So you order a material and you deliver it on the same day. And this has meant a lot of, reorganization of the entire logistics function, including, where the warehouses are located and how the materials are moved. The processes have undergone a change to actually bring about this kind of agile and, quick delivery system. So what is the need, for legal aspects in supply chain management? The knowledge of the legal aspects, can impact the purchasing and the manufacturing costs. Knowing the laws can give you certain advantages and, can make a difference, between you and your competition. Also, it has another aspect to it. Not following the law or not knowing the law can also generate liability, which is something like a penalty. So it can affect you both ways. It can help you as well as it can be detrimental to your business. Stiff global competition requires that you really have to be very careful of your operations. In the sense, you need to make sure that you are taking advantage of all the laws, which will help you bring down the costs. At the same time, you do not incur any additional costs and you do not incur any liabilities or penalties. Changes in laws from country to country. Every country has slightly different legislations. Although today it so happens that whatever happens in Europe or USA is more or less copied into the local laws. But nevertheless, there are some differences. For example, some of the industries that I have worked with, the local requirements as far as safety of the product or the prohibited substances, restrictive substances in the product are much more lenient as compared to Europe or USA. So knowing the laws of the country is of utmost importance, because compliance has to be not only of your country but of the country to which you are with which you are doing business. So it could be either you are importing the material or you are exporting the material. In both the cases, it's very important. Effect on the delivery and transportation time. And again, because this depends on the local and the international laws. As you know that in the global business, you have sea shipments, air shipments, and there are a lot of compliances. So these actually affect the transportation time and your delivery performance. So knowing them also gives you a realistic perspective, helps you commit the right delivery date. It helps you, in not being too optimistic and committing something that you cannot keep up with. And lastly, of course, you have the pollution control laws. There are countries, where certain kind of packing material is not allowed, plastics, for example, because disposal of this packing material is very difficult. They always insist on biodegradable material. They want wooden packing material which has to be heat treated. So pollution control laws, even the product that you're selling, if you're exporting a car, then the car has to actually comply with the pollution control norms of that particular country. Take the example of Europe. Europe has a different standard for pollution. So any product that you sell also must comply with the local environmental laws and pollution control laws. Let's look at what are the major acts and laws which are today prevalent in the industry, or which a person wanting to do business, whether it is domestic or global, needs to know and which are the laws which touches them. So you have the Indian contracts law. Basically, this is a contract law wherever you are, you know, entering into a contract where a party makes an offer and the other party accepts the offer. And then you have an agreement, you have a contract. So all contracts are actually governed by this Indian Contracts Act. Companies Act, all registered companies, so private limited companies, public limited companies, single owner companies, all these are covered under the Companies Act. You have the Indian Partnership Act. So you know that a lot of companies or a lot of firms are partnership firms. The laws governing the constitution of a partnership, you know, how the profits will be shared or how the liabilities will be shared. So that is dictated by the Partnership Act. Central Sales Tax Act. Central Sales Tax is a tax levied on sale of goods. So whenever there is a sale of goods or there is a change of ownership, this particular tax comes into play. Here what we are talking of is the Central Sales Tax, which means the tax which is imposed by the central government. Central Excise Act, this is a tax which is on manufactured goods. So every manufacturing unit, if it has a turnover beyond a certain limit, earlier it used to be something like 50 lakhs per annum, they had to be registered under Central Excise. Of course, there are certain exemptions. Not every industry needs to be registered under Central Excise, but this is more of a manufacturing tax, which is applied on manufactured goods. Just to mention here, there is something called as State Excise Act also, because things like alcohol are taxed by the state excise authorities, which I'm just mentioning here for your knowledge sake. Sale of Goods Act. So whenever there is a sale of goods, there are acts governing the sale of goods, including any guarantees, warranties, any performances which need to be taken care of. So that is governed by this Sale of Goods Act. Laws of agencies. So wherever there are agents or agencies, this law comes into effect. Contracts of indemnity and guarantee. So you know, wherever you have a money transaction and there are indemnities or a risk is covered by somebody, so you have this contract of indemnity or guarantees. That means somebody stands a guarantee for the money which has been loaned. Carriers Act, this covers the transportation of goods by all means. Mostly this is covering the inland transport. The laws of insurance, where you are covering the various laws related to insurance, every kind of insurance. So it can be life, it can be marine, it can be goods and property. Indian Negotiable Instruments Act, these are payment instruments. That means wherever money is being exchanged, so negotiable instruments are instruments which can be freely transferred or exchanged between people. So the Negotiable Instrument Act covers this kind of instruments, which we will cover a little later in one of the chapters. Act of Environmental Protection. So again, this is about protecting the environment against pollution, etc. Basically, sustainable development. Intellectual property rights. As you know that businesses tend to have creations, their own creations, which are termed as intellectual property. It can be, you know, some technology, it can be some engineering, it can be artistic creations, etc. So all these are covered under intellectual properties rights, where the right of the creator or the right of the person who has, you know, owns the intellectual property are covered. And then of course there are local laws applicable at the place of business. So you know, if you are in Mumbai, you will have the POKCHOI laws or LBT, which is applicable now in certain parts of Maharashtra. So and there may be a lot of other local laws applicable, you know, to the unit or the office, you know, something like Shop and Establishment Act, etc. So these are all the local laws which are we are talking about. So let's look at some of the important aspects of the legal requirements. All applicable basic laws of the land, you know, are to be followed when you are doing business. And what are the basic laws? Generally, you know that the laws are the fundamental rights. So, you know, you have the fundamental rights, you have the constitutional rights, and then you have the various laws and acts. So, all those have to be protected. Why I'm saying this is because, let's say you have an office, you are engaging people, employing people, and you have HR policies. They cannot contravene, or they cannot go against some of these basic laws, which I said fundamental rights. They cannot curtail the fundamental rights or the constitutional rights given to the people. So in that sense, and this I'm giving an example in HR, but this applies to every area of business, because there are certain rights you know, which are given by the constitution, which have to be complied with. For global transactions, the latest laws in the countries, as well as treaties between the countries, to be followed. So we already talked about, you know, when you're doing global trade, you need to know the laws of the place with which you are doing business. Sometimes it may so happen that even the countries through which the goods pass, you may have to comply with those laws, especially if the goods are dangerous in nature, etc. Now, apart from that, so you have to comply with the laws of your own country, the law of the country with which you are doing business, either purchasing or selling. And then, you know, there could be certain treaties which also could be overriding the laws. So you have, you know, a lot of preferential treatment agreements between certain countries where you have some concessions. So those one must know. And this is what we were talking about, you know, taking advantage of the system, you know, for being competitive in the marketplace. So knowing these things gives a fillip, gives a advantage to the business. And most of these laws all across the world keep on changing. So it's very important that the business or the organization keeps pace with changes in the law, because if you don't, then you could land up violating the law or losing an opportunity where you could have, you know, probably taken advantage of certain changes. Further, you know, the interpretation of the law may change depending upon the judicial pronouncement. Means sometimes it so happens the act or the law is not very clear on certain interpretations. Now, if there is a court case and the court announces a judgment on a particular aspect which has been ambiguous, then this also becomes a kind of a interpretation of the law. So this is what we call as precedence. Once you set a precedence, suppose there is another case which has a very similar situation, or where the you know, circumstances are similar, you can apply the precedence. So if it's favorable, people always look for precedents and cite them so that it be applied to their case as well. laws can be amended with retrospective effect. So we talked about, you know, the frequent changes of the law, or you know, apart from that, this is a risk, because at times the laws can change retrospectively. So when you are doing the business, you do not know that, you know, you could be saddled with certain liabilities, and this can happen when there is a retrospective change. So suddenly, you know, some taxes are applicable or payable by the business. So it's important to be updated and aware of any such changes, because they can make or break a business. So this is another important aspect of the legal management. So broadly, we have covered the basics of, you know, what are the legal aspects in supply chain management and why it is so important while doing business. Thank you.